Major Harden, Reel 58. You were telling me about the advice you gave to the Malay RSM.
I said I would call in the SIB to sort that. There's something wrong somewhere. So he then went back into the commanding office and he confessed.
How long had he been doing this, did he say?
But the long and short of it was the colonel blamed me. He said, well, you should have gone up to the Sergeant's Mess and found this stock. I said, I don't walk around the Sergeant's Mess. I mean, the Sergeant's Mess is the Sergeant's Mess. I said, how could I find it? I found out the source of where it was going wrong, which is my job as a camp holder. I said, well, I can't go around looking. Who would think about going looking in cupboards and that for bottles of whiskey or anything like that? You know, I thought it was silly, but the thing was that RSM was court-martialed, you see, and that reflected badly
on the CO.
That's right, you see, and he didn't forgive me for it. And yet I couldn't see why, because I said, look, you know, I've done my job.
Who was this commanding officer?
He was a gunner, Colonel Wilson. He'd been, I think he was a brave officer in Korea. Mm. Was it Korea? No, I think in Burma, and he's been badly wounded in his right hand. No, but he really, you know, couldn't see that I'd done the job and found out this thing for it. I'd only been doing the job for a month or 2 months, and it came to light. I mean, what else could anyone do?
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, it was a very boring job, and eventually, when my time was up, we got on the boat to come back from the Navassa back to England, and landed in Southampton. I think it was March 61. On the boat, I got a signal from AT-17 offering me the job as OC to ADS in Germany, which was a great job, really was. I was commanding these. I had 180 tanks, Centurions, a dozen Saladin armored cars. That's what we had in Germany, Saladins.
Right.
About a dozen priests, I think they were, the self-propelled guns.
Be the 105.
105s.
SP.
Yeah. Mm. And a couple of bridge layers, a couple of ARBs, probably three or four ARBs. In Montreal.
What?
I had about 30 senior NCOs and officers. I think I had about four officers, five or six senior Remy NCOs, all different Eckies, gun fitters, and that sort of thing.
And, what's an ECHI?
Electrical control equipment.
Oh, right.
And about 150 Germans, all technicians, ex-Panzer people, some mechanics, some gun fitters, drivers, all that sort of thing. And they were very simple. So keen, so efficient, so proud of their particular job. And I had them in Mönchengladbach, and at Hannum, which would be about 100 miles away, forward, I had another 60 Centurions with about 50 Germans, the same, all well trained, one officer, and three or four warrant officers. Chief Clerk, RQMS, and some Greeley warrant officers, and they were all under my command, which was a, and that was the whole of the BAOR reserve tanks. And so whenever a regiment wanted a replacement tank, I used to send it from Ham forward to them.
How did you send them? Did you take them on transporters?
Transporters, yeah.
Did you have those under your command as well?
No, but they were in the same barracks in Ham as my tanks. So all I needed to do was walk across 50 yards to the officer, the commanding officer of that, and sort of tell him what we wanted. And the transporters did that and loaded on. And then I would then top up from Munching Barracks up to there, and then I'd ask for a transport to come from Ham and take it up. So it was.
It's a trickling through system, isn't it? To move the tanks round and round and round.
Yeah, yes. And it was great, really. And I used to get a tremendous number of officers, senior officers, generals, coming round the unit. Because it was Commander in Chief's pride and joy, these tanks. And so I used to get the Director of Royal Armoured Corps, I used to come get one every year, or every time they changed, they would come round my unit. And all the top brass in Germany used to come. And one day I had. When General Gavin Goldsmith, he was Director of Royal Armour Corps, and he paid me a visit, and he came at, I think, 2 o'clock, just after lunch, 1:30, and I had all the tanks, 180 tanks, lined up outside the hangars, with the guns all up, dead lines, 3 hangars, and he looked along and he said, gosh, they look good. They're all shining and they look really great. And all my German staff were standing in front of them. He said, will they move? Will they start up? And I said, yes. He said, all right, let's see them. So he stood out in front of every tank. He said, right, start up, drive up the road, inside the bags, up the top, turn around, come back, and into the garage. He stood in front of each one. They all went right round and he watched that everyone went into the hangar, so there was no switching. And we came to one, an ARB. And I said, oh, General, do you mind if we don't move that? He said, why? I said, well, my mechanics are a bit upset there because there's a wren nesting in the back of it, and they'd sooner wait until, you know, the fledging had flown before they.
They started to move.
They said, yeah, okay. They stood in front of everyone. Mm. They all went up until the end. That took him from 1:30, but I think he left at 5. Mm. He saw everyone go. Mm. And when he was driving back, he said to Robin Wright, who was his G2 armoured at Rheindahlen, he said, do you think Freddie was upset that I made him do all that? Robin said, no, he's delighted. Mm. He's shown that every tank will move. He said, well, I've been to regiments where I've said to start up every tank, and I've had at least 8 or 9 that wouldn't start, or something wrong. He said, there was 180 there, and they all moved up the road. He said, I was surprised. And Robin said, oh, Freddie's delighted. He said, if there'd have been a dozen that wouldn't have started, he wouldn't have been so happy. Mm-hmm. But there, he said, it did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was all down to the German
staff
in the camps. Mm-hmm. And then another day, I had another Director of Royal Armour Corps came, and he said, we had the war plan, that if anything should happen, all the tanks would be started up, all the tools, which were in a shed, and I'd had them all boxed with the tank numbers on, and I had rollers that would roll them on the back of the tanks, and I'd done all that in the time I was there. And he said, right, the war plan was that they'd all load up the ammunition, the tools, and motor onto the railway flats, which were just 300 yards away, get on the flats and motor off up to the front line way. Yeah. And this was all in the operation.
Where were they going to be trained? Do you know?
Well up forward. We'd already picked the place where they would go.
Were they all going to go to the same place as a sort of central reserve?
Still under my command.
Yes.
But in a forward location in the woods. Mm. And I'd recce all this well beforehand.
So you've got a good camouflaged and concealed location.
A huge area that had been allocated for me to take the tanks. And so to see whether this could do it in the timetable, I said, all right, I'll do it. But not move them up front. What we'd do was to move them onto the trains. The train would move up the track a while, give it 10 minutes, come back. We'd offload them all, put them back in the hangars, and then do it so that every tank, and that took 3 days, that was the timetable, and that all worked. And everyone was loaded up, and there was loads of, top brass there, sort of loading it down, especially from movements who were much involved with it. And that's the only time that had been done. So, that was, they were delighted with that. But all those sort of things, they were. That made the job interesting, and it challenged you. Can you do this?
Mm.
It was a great thing. And because I used to go on to all the corps conferences with commanding officers of the regiments, and I was considered the top man on tank replacement and movement and that sort of thing. And it was a very rewarding job.
Who did you report to? Did you report direct to Army Headquarters? BAOR?
BAOR, yeah. Okay. So there was Brigadier, RAC, who I was directly reported to. Nobody else had any say over me at all, apart from the Brigadier RAC.
Because in effect you were the Armoured Reserve, weren't you?
I was. The whole of the Reserve was held by me.
Yeah.
I remember on an exercise we were on that, but without the tanks, the general, corps commander, he was a nice man, he commanded one of the RHA regiments. And we were on this exercise, and he said something to me. And I said, General, you better be careful. I've got more tanks than you've got. I said, I can come up and take those any time. He knocked his head off of that.
How long were you there doing that job?
5 years.
5 years. That's a normal posting is yes.
But
how was it you got extended?
Well, I don't know. They got extended. Well, job was there, and then of course later, Robin Botbank took command of the 12th Lancers, and he came up for one. We were issuing our 2000 tank, I think. The 12th Lancers were getting it. And he came and said, Freddie, I want you to come back to the regiment. He just taken command.
So the regiment had at that time gone over to tanks,
though.
That's right. Yeah. That happened while you were away.
Yeah.
What was your sort of unusual turnover of tanks in this, in the ADS?
What do you think? It varied. A lot varied on, sometimes. You might have got a big issue of tanks late in the year, and so there weren't so many needed for the following year. But I used to reckon that you would get rid of at least 10 to 12 a month.
Roughly how long would a tank be in your unit then, from the time of arrival to going out again?
To a couple of years or so. You see, when you've got that number, it would take, say, a couple of years for the turnover. Because they were a certain type of tank. Some of them would be the normal gun tank. Some would be the command tanks, which didn't turn over quite so
rapidly.
And I think the armoured cars used to turn over a fair bit. So, I suppose if you changed over the full lot, see, there was 180 mine and then 60 up front. And that worked out, I think, there were 10 armoured regiments at the time, and those 16 forward depot were the six reserve tanks for each regiment.
Yeah.
You see, if the balloon had gone up, those 60 would have gone straight to each armoured regiment as their
replacement,
their reserve tanks, or they would start using them more or less straight away. Their extra tanks, I think, that they would have. And then the replacements would come from us. So you could reckon that there'd be about 240 tanks of different types.
What about getting entirely new tanks? Did you get any of those coming up from manufacturers?
Not to me. They would go for, they're always issued to the Ordnance Corps. And they might come into me, you know, as new tanks eventually anyway. But I used to get a lot of the replacement or renewed tanks from the base workshops once they'd been overhauled and they came in almost as new. And they would then go, and I would then sort of make sure that each tank was turned over in the right. If I got a brand new tank from workshop, I didn't issue that straight away. I'd take one of the ones that had been
the older ones,
providing it was the right.
And if the workshops were doing these repairs and so on, what were your fitters and gunsmiths and so on doing? Well,
they would still have a certain amount of work to do on them. You know, a tank would sit there and you'd find something would, an oil steel would go, or something. There was always something to do on the vehicle. And the gun fitters would be taking the guns out and checking them and going through them as a cycle, more than anything. And we'd take them around the test tracks on test. So then they'd come back and they'd be washed down and checked, greased and maintenance and any faults. The fitters would come and work on it. Same as the radio fitters, they'd test those, and same with the gun fitters.
What was on your test circuit? Was it a physically demanding?
Oh, no. The test circuit would be, we had a concrete road that went right round about.
Right.
And we also had a bit of ground with sort of rough ground, which we used to take them on sometimes. And so they, you know, just to make sure that they were still all right. I mean, if a tank has sort of been sitting for a long time, I think it deteriorates. So that was the thing. We had a system where we kept a check, which when that tank was checked for guns or on a road test or whatever, so that within a month everything was checked.
So it sounds like this is really a sort of cyclical activity again, that you have to keep going.
That's right, yes.
To make sure the tanks were in combat weather condition as soon as they were issued forward.
That's right. And they always, the regiments always used to like to get as many tanks as they could from me just prior to their CIV inspection. You know, the inspection I said about where every vehicle is examined by fitters from another regiment or another workshop. If the regiment could get rid of, say, six old tanks up to workshops, and I could supply them with six brand new ones. That meant there's six tanks there, they haven't got to worry about it. They go straight on the inspection and get top marks. And you found that every regiment would know when they're getting them, right, let's get rid of that and try to get them back and get six new ones from me. And so every commanding officer used to speak highly of my unit, you know, what wonderful tanks they used to get from me, you see. So it meant no work.
Did you issue tanks more or less on demand from regiments?
It came from movements, yes. They'd say, right, so-and-so wants a particular type tank.
Yeah.
And I'd say, right, what date of range transport, when they want it, tomorrow, right, they can go.
You said that there was a rather more rapid turnover with the Saladin armoured cars. Why would that be?
I think at the time, I don't know how many armoured car regiments there were then, probably two, probably three there, you see. And I only had 12 of those, you see. So if you've got three, there's only four per regiment per year, which is probably could be mileage or accidents. anything. Mm. But you'd look to almost to turn them over.
Mm. What about the SP guns, the 105?
Not very often.
Not very
not
often.
Very often, no. Mm. And the same with the ARVs and the bridge layers I had. You know, it would be a one-off for that. Mm. Mm. But they were there as a reserve for the...
Mm. And what about life in Munch and Gladbach? Was it a good life?
Oh, it was, yes.
Living there?
I lived down in the town in my quarters there. And the mess was the 17 RBG mess, which was a big vehicle depot. And they were, I was within their bounds, you see. So I lived in that mess, which was really good. And I used to go to Rheinland headquarters. Three or four times a week, various reasons to see the G2 armor or anything else, movement, people, anything. But it was very good there, actually. Mm. That was a great job.
Mm. You're saying that they, you know, you got on well with the local Germans in Wolfenbüttel.
Yes.
Was it the same in Mönchengladbach?
Yes, yes. Got to know them even more there, because you were right on the edge of the town. Mm. And the shops, people were so pleasant and also. And of course, with my German staff, I got on so well with them. They were so keen, so loyal. They were, if necessary, if the thing wasn't quite ready to go out, say, tomorrow, and this is 3 o'clock in the afternoon, they'd work on right through until they were satisfied it was ready. Without any thought of overtime or anything like that, it's their loyalty.
Well, you said they're all ex-Panzer men.
Most of them.
Were they technically civilians?
Oh, they were. They were is the, like the German, what they call them, the MSO were the Polish people, I think, weren't they, who drove the tank transporters, and these were the other ones who wore the green uniform, which were semi-military, but they were still civilians, and they were paid through the army, I think, but the Germans still paid them through that. And I think my budget was about £250,000 a year wage bill, I think.
Where did your officers come from? Were they Armoured Corps or Remy or...?
Armoured Corps or Gunner. I had a quartermaster who was an Armoured Corps, a captain who was an Armoured Corps, and a lieutenant or a captain, whichever, was a gunner. Mm. And they were all good chaps, really.
Did they stay on long term as well, or were they rotated through?
Well, about 3 year turnover. Mm. Although they all want to stay on longer, if they could.
Mm. You were saying that Robin Brockbank decided he wanted you back into the regiment, so this was the sort of second time you'd been hoisted back,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And because Robin Brockbank had just taken over command of the regiment. Mm. And he said, Freddie, will you come back and to command HQ for him? Yeah. So I said, yes, it's nice to be asked back, and asked the colonel to ask him to take a particular job. Yeah. You know, I think every commanding officer likes, when he takes over, to put someone in a particular job where he knows that... he doesn't have to worry too much about it. It's a good quartermaster, HQ squadron commander who can do the administration, and some good squadron leaders. It's he picks them then. And I said yes. So I handed over my job and rejoined the regiment up in.
Who took over from you when you moved on from the delivery squadron?
A major who had been second commander, I think, of the tank regiment. Mm. And he took over. And I don't think he had the same rapport with the Germans, because he tried to start telling some of the senior Germans who you could rely on, telling him what he could do and what he couldn't do. And the German knew his Germans, he knew, you know, which I think it was good for them, apparently. Mm.
Did you more or less leave your Germans alone to get on with it?
Well, once you told them what to do, you didn't have to chase them or anything. I mean, you had one good man who was the top man, who sort of had an office just along the binding, and you told him what you wanted and that sort of thing. Yes, sir, and he's very smart, very correct, you know, and saluted you and this. And you could leave it to them. Once you start going down interfering, say, don't do this, they sort of look, say, well, you know, we've been doing this for years, we know what we're doing. And so you do it. If a man's doing a good job, you don't try to interfere with him, provided you know he's doing a good job. And the proof of the pudding was in the eating.
So you went back up to Osnabrück to join the British. Was it about that time that the amalgamation...
No, they had the amalgamation.
They'd had the amalgamation.
About 1961.
Right. So it was now, in effect, the 9th, 12th Lancers rather than
the
12th.
Right. Yes.
Had that changed things significantly?
Not really, no. I think it was a good amalgamation. Everyone seemed to get on well with each other. They had the change of 9th, not the 12th Lancer. John Clark Kennedy was the first one to command the amalgamated regiment.
Yes.
Then they had a 9th Lancer and a 12th Lancer, so they were doing it. You know,
alternating.
And the mixture of NCOs and that and the 9th. And, you know, they got on very well. It was a good thing.
So it all happened by the time you rejoined.
That's right, yes.
Had the structure of HQ squadron changed? Because you'd been to IC of HQ squadron, hadn't you?
We still had a British wrecking crew.
Yeah.
Scattered cars. The band was still there, the same number, a very good band. We had a helicopter crew.
That would be new, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I don't know how long it came from. The Gazelles, I think they had then. And, of course, they had tanks. As I say, and I found I had plenty to do. The other thing I was always picked on to do was to run the regimental pay when the paymaster went away. He was Royal Army Pay Corps, and when he went away for a month or so, they kind of asked me to do that job. Again, I liked doing it, dealing with accounts. And
you could do that.
I enjoyed doing it, you see. And I think it's something when you sort accounts out and find they come out right, it's a great thing. And also, it's a responsible job and one that involves a lot of trust, really. I mean, it's great to be asked to do a job like, because you handle a lot of money then, because you handle money for a lot of regiment, which in those days was quite a huge amount. So when it was and the regiment used to go out quite a lot, and I used to have to take the HQ squadron out on exercise, you see, with all the transport and various things, and some of the times we went out, it was bitterly cold. I know one day we had the whole transport lined up on the square, and Colonel Robin came and he said to me, well, are you going to take them out in this black ice, you know, really bitterly cold, and about 14 below? And he said, are you going to take them out, or are you going to call it off? Well, I thought, well, how can I tell the commanding officer, you know, I'm not going, I'll call it off. So I said, oh yes, we're going out. The tanks didn't go out, because they were, you know, sliding all over the place.
Yeah.
The black ice, we went, and I went out on the training air at Aqua, and it was pretty cold, 14 below. And you couldn't do much, because the wheels were getting nicer,